Okay, we're recording, and let me get to where I can. Actually, I just saw you grab something to drink. That's not all, just in case. I'll have this handy. Okay, so I am ready, Michael, whenever you are.
Okay, well, and we'll cut all this out, all this extra bits.
All this
But
fun
anyway,
stuff.
yeah, the outtakes, right? So anyway, welcome to another episode of the Left to Boom Show. I'm here with my co-host Phil Wilson, and our guest today is Megan Cook. We're going to talk about technology and how it's used to measure and enhance employee engagement and sentiment in the workplace. And I think that the technology angle, I mean, it's not completely unprecedented, but we hopefully want to have like a little bit of a fresh take on it about how Happy Companies has adapted technology and AI and assessment tools to help companies be better in measuring their employee engagement and feedback and that type of stuff. So that's the conversation we're going to have today. And I'm going to introduce Megan. She's the Chief Administrative Officer and the co-founder of Happy Companies. Welcome to Left the Boom Show. How are you doing today?
Welcome.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to join you guys today and to dig in.
We're happy to have you. So I neglected to ask you this in the pre-show. Where are you geographically located? Where do you live?
So I live in Southern California, a little town, not as little anymore, but a little town called Temecula, about an
Oh, I've heard
hour
of that.
north of San Diego.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
So
I've never been
that's
there, but I've
where
heard.
you should come visit us. It's a beautiful place. Yeah.
San
So our
Diego.
company is headquartered here, and that's where I'm out of. Yeah.
Nice. Well, let's jump to, why don't you give us your brief bio and tell us a bit
Yeah.
about Happy Company, and then we'll start into the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. So my background is really rooted in financial and administrative operations. So I always like to say it's like all the fun stuff, right? So the financial aspects of it, compliance, legal, and really that also includes human resources. So I've spent a long time working in that, probably the last 10 years or so at an executive level, where really being able to kind of help drive business operations and integrate those aspects of my work into business strategy. Spent a long time with my co-founder running a different company, which was a media company in the automotive space. And about 5 years or so ago, we started to kick around the idea of Happy Companies, which led us to found Happy Companies. Within the last couple of years. So it really started in earnest in 2023. And Happy Companies is essentially a tool. It's a built off of a technology that's meant to help companies that are looking to build team dynamics, better collaboration, improve communication, and through the process of understanding each other better. And so kind of taking what we felt we experienced in terms of running really effective and dynamic teams, and creating a tool that helps people deploy that, in their own teams and in their own workspaces, and utilizing the aspect of technology, which I know we'll dig into a little bit more, to kind of improve what we would consider like that old legacy model of addressing, that understanding of your team, and helping business leaders integrate that into the business outcomes, right? Because at the end of the day, oftentimes what business leaders are going to naturally be focused on is what we consider organizational successes. And Happy Companies believes that those organizational successes are tied to our people. And so how are we tapping into our people, our greatest asset, and using that to really transform the workplace and end up creating the strongest competitive advantage for the company through people leadership and helping people work better together.
So why don't you go ahead and ask the mentor question?
Yeah, we're big around here on what we call the hero assumption, and a big part of being a great leader is believing in your team, even sometimes when things aren't going great, right? And so one of my favorite questions is just to ask our guests, like, who was that leader in your life, the person who maybe believed in you maybe before you thought of yourself as a leader, or, you know, but someone like who believed in you maybe when you didn't believe in yourself, and that could be in your personal life or professional career. But who do you think of when I talk about a leader like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's really powerful because it oftentimes is that ability for others to see within us things that we can't necessarily see for ourselves, right? To understand their perspective, that we're able to really fully tap into that potential that's there. And truly the person that immediately comes to mind is my co-founder, James. So I started working for James about 15 years ago. And he's the CEO of the company that we worked for previously. He's run many, many companies. And so my role really initially was just as an individual contributor, right? So we just had kind of a regular manager and employee type of relationship. I think it was through the process of him, you know, kind of pushing me towards stepping outside of myself and being willing a little bit to sometimes be uncomfortable because I was doing things that weren't like my natural tendency. Because he did see in me and believe in me in terms of my leadership. So if I was going to think back, you know, maybe even 10 years ago, and we're talking about those business successes that I had mentioned earlier, I really would have been giving you a different answer. Because at that time, I was what I like to kind of think of as a very like compliance-minded, contributor to the team. So especially in my role working in the HR aspects of it, I approached it very administratively. And there's, you know, such a need for that. It's not to take away the fact that that type of contribution is extremely valuable. You have to make sure that, you know, the rules are being followed and all of the boxes.
You're not one of those HR people that like doesn't care about the rules.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You don't, that's not what we want, right? So, but what I found really was that, James had offered me the opportunity to work with a leadership coach that he was working with. And it was a great leadership coach who was really the first person to kind of introduce to me, you know, the idea of diving into self-assessment and utilizing the information of that self-assessment in order to better understand myself and work better with my team, and then to start to better kind of understand my team, right? So this idea of leadership being my ability to kind of meet other people where they need me to be. And so I was extremely focused on, like I said, kind of my natural task orientation and detail orientation. And I wasn't necessarily seeing, you know, the impact that that was having. The example that I tend to go to is that my communication style, just naturally, I'm like I said, very task oriented, right? So I want to get to business. I can be very direct in my communication, and I kind of want to just work through things. And through the process of that coaching, I was able to kind of understand that other people maybe were perceiving that differently, and to have to sit with the fact and kind of think about the fact that while I kind of saw it as like, oh, we're just getting our stuff done, they kind of saw me as being a little bit, maybe even cold at times, or too direct, and that, you know, in order to really be able to work effectively with them, I had to adapt out of that and give them some more of what they needed in terms of warmth in the conversation, or, hey, let's start with a personal check-in before we just dive right into all of the business talk and things along those lines. And that process really allowed me to kind of understand, okay, wow, when I do this, I see better results. I am able to see the direct impact that I have by being able to understand my behavior and understand the needs of my team, and then adjust and adapt my behavior in order to be a more effective team member, a more effective leader. And the outcomes were better. And so I was able to kind of shift my focus a little bit and understand, like, yes, those business outcomes, productivity, you know, profit, obviously, those are all essential. But at the end of the day, they're all tied to the people that are a part of our organization. And when I'm a better people leader, when I'm able to really dive into my people leadership, I end up having better outcomes and better results. And so, you know, I think that James, for me, really pushed me to understand the importance of that, you know, adaptive nature, and understand how powerful that can be when you're working with a really diverse team of people that all need a little bit of a different version of you. And then beyond that, you know, providing me the tools, the tangible tools in order to kind of go through that process of self-reflection and development, and really being able to continue to grow outside of that, you know, initial mindset that I had of kind of just trying to manage the tasks and learning how to really tap into leading humans, you know, all full of the diverse nuances that come with our humanity.
We'll switch gears in a second, but okay, two questions. First, is James wired like similar to you or like opposite?
Opposite.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then,
sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, that's one of the, you know, unique natures of our ability to work together and have in our work relationship is we are extremely different in the way that we naturally approach anything. You know, James is a dynamic, big picture thinker. He has a lot of energy that he's bringing to the table all the time. He's more naturally just like comfortable in certain situations with, you know, people and stakeholders. And I am definitely more naturally, you know, reserved. And I kind of think of things in a more analytical nature. I like to dig into data. And so I think one of the things that helped us become a successful pairing and really be able to work well together is the idea that we could find the synergy in that rather than focusing on where the differences are, recognizing we have two very different styles, but how do those styles actually complement each other? And how can we give each other what we need at different times rather than just like sitting in the friction that could come from, you know, two people looking at things very differently. And you know, you have to be willing to make some changes and really like meet someone in the middle or sometimes beyond the middle in order to be effective in that way.
That was my second question, because you're not naturally wired. So I can see Michael is laughing because like this is very similar to our workplace here. I'm kind of James, and then we have a Megan. That's not her name. Actually, her daughter's name is Megan, but
yeah.
So it's not natural necessarily for you. Like your go-to is the kind of like, let's get to work. And we do something around here we call best and best, but it's like, what's the best thing going on in your personal life? What's the best thing going on at work? But for someone who's sort of naturally wired as let's get to work, that conversation at the beginning can sometimes be like, that's not necessarily your sweet spot. I'm just curious, like, how do you manage, how do you manage that?
Yeah. So that type of thing, right? Those types of like icebreakers even, or just like getting that part of the conversation started could, for me, you know, if I'm just sitting with my natural tendencies, create a little bit of anxiety. I'll start to overthink it. I'm like, oh, I got to have like the perfect answer. And it's, you know, rather than just kind of going with it. And so part of it was just the practice of being uncomfortable enough that it stops being uncomfortable. And so we talk about this with my team sometimes, and I like to say to them that as long as we're not unsafe, it's okay for us to be uncomfortable if that is where the growth is happening. And I do think that this is one of those skill sets that develops over time, and it's both ways, right? So it's regardless of what you're tapping into, if you're looking to kind of like grow in a certain area that, you know, is important, then the practice of just the discipline of just doing it. Yeah. And then it starts to feel more comfortable, you know, like I, like I said, you know, years ago, it was a different version. I probably would not have been comfortable getting on a podcast, right? Or sitting in front of a camera and having this conversation. And so it is a testament to the idea that like, we're not static in those tendencies of ours. And through practice and through intention, we can develop the ability to kind of work outside of ourselves. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're changing or that you have to be inauthentic. It just means that you can learn to kind of tap into that skill set that maybe is not your natural strength.
I tell leaders all the time that, like, if you don't have that sort of gut feeling of, I'm a little anxious about having this next conversation, you're not leading. Like that, yeah. That's what leadership feels like. You know, yeah. Not like all the time. If you feel like that all the time, then maybe you have other issues. But like, if you're not occasionally feeling that feeling, you're probably not really stretching or having the conversations that you should be having.
100%. It's that kind of discomfort, right? That little part of us that's like, oh, I don't know that I love this. But that's where that growth is happening. So you're right, like stretching ourselves. Otherwise, you're just staying in the same place. And to your point, staying in the same place isn't leadership, because leadership means that you're constantly evolving. You're constantly having to continue to push yourself into a new space. Like, we can never feel that we have reached the pinnacle. We have to, like, consistently drive ourselves towards that growth place.
So Phil wrote a book and has built a substantial part of our consulting practice around a concept that he calls approachable leadership. And he talks about things like low and high power distance and a bunch of other things. And it sounds like you walked a path where you really learned to decrease the power distance that you had from a, not necessarily that you weren't were unlikable, but just kind of like the added, you know, like I was, you were just, you know, doing your stuff, right? And now it sounds like you really, really shifted your leadership dynamic. That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a part of me that may have been a little bit, I don't, you know, like, not necessarily, again, it's not that I didn't value my relationships with my team or truly care about them, but I was failing at making them know that. I was so stuck in my way and my approach and thinking that that was the right way to do things that I was failing to let them know the full picture of it. And so, you know, once you're able to kind of get past that mental hurdle, and for me, just seeing the impact that it had, you know, you really start to understand how it can be super powerful and transformative to your team.
Very well said. Right. Let's talk about the HAPPY platform and the HAPPY assessment and some of those things. So you walked this really challenging and amazing path with James, and you guys have started this business that I guess kind of in some way maybe seeks to help perpetuate the very things that he helped you with earlier in your career, which I think is a great story. But talk to us, and let's start out with what is the HAPPY platform, and it talk to us about what it is and how businesses use it, how you help your clients.
Yeah, so at the heart of it, the platform is, again, built as a way to create understanding. So there's this kind of idea that we have in terms of getting the whole picture, right? And that's probably when I think about the challenges of every workplace that we're talking to, at the end of the day, they're people challenges. So you have a challenge with productivity, that's a people challenge. You have a challenge with, you know, profitability, that's a people challenge. Executing strategy, that's a people challenge. So how can we help to create ways to address the people challenges? And for us, that comes through this concept of really being able to understand the whole picture of somebody and the whole picture of your team. And so what HAPPY does is we have an assessment. It's a HAPPY assessment. It kind of helps, you know, it's a very quick assessment. It helps it helps kind of create this work style report, essentially, that then drives this understanding. So the HAPPY assessment is based off of the methodology of DISC. And I don't know if you guys are familiar at all. Many people are. It's very popular methodology within, you know, businesses and the military. Tons of people have taken a DISC assessment, right? So what we were finding, I guess, in the process of kind of thinking through HAPPY and thinking through the way that we use tools like that, is that DISC assessments on their surface. Any assessment is great. It gives you a lot of information. But these legacy tools, you know, require a tremendous amount of cognitive load in terms of just being able to retain all of that information about somebody. And then it doesn't necessarily give you the actionable way to deploy it in your day to day. Right. So if I know that I'm going into a meeting with James and I want to like think through things, I got to grab my binder of assessments out or search for the PDF or whatever it is, and then do my review and work to kind of figure that out. And what we do is we put all of that into a platform that puts that information directly at your fingertips. So whether you're on your laptop or you want to pull it up on your phone, you get access to all of that. But then it takes it a step further because it also provides, you know, a coaching aspect to it as well. So one of the things that we, you know, were thinking through as we went through the process of, you know, coming up with Happy and really ideating how we could make a big impact within teams at scale was understanding that we felt like technology was going to be the driver for that. We knew that this understanding of people was powerful. We knew that assessments and those types of reports were really great at helping to create that understanding for people, but we weren't finding a great tool that could kind of propel that at scale. And so I spoke a little bit earlier about the fact that, you know, James was pivotal in my own journey by providing me the opportunity to have coaching. And coaching is amazing. And, you can't replace human coaching. That's very pivotal for a lot of people. But once you get to a place of, you know, maybe beyond 50 employees, let's say, that what we're learning at, you know, the level where we're getting the executive coaching. So let's say we're C-level or management or things along those lines. Every level that you have that, it's a little bit harder to continue to drive that information down. And it's unattainable really for most companies to be able to provide that to everybody, right? So you have 1,000 people. Are we going to be able to provide 1,000 people with access to all of that? So how can we not ever replace what human coaching is doing, but utilize technology to help make that accessible in a way that kind of democratizes that access across organizations? And so Happy as a platform uses the Happy assessment to kind of create and power the Happy work style, which is, you know, that work style report. It helps us all understand each other. You can look at mine and you can look at James and you can see all those differences in terms of our communication style and how we problem solve. But then you also have the opportunity to actually get this AI enhanced coaching. You can go in and solve specific problems. So within the platform, you know, you're going to go pitch an idea to somebody. You pull up specifically, hey, I'm pitching an idea. It's this person. Behind the scenes, you know, the platform is taking into consideration your specific style, their specific style, and it's giving you very personalized coaching on how to approach that conversation, how to work through a problem, how to enhance your communication with them, how to have better one-on-one team meetings, right? So there's all of that. And then in addition, it starts the process of really surfacing this coaching just in the tools that you're using every day. So for instance, our company, we use Slack as a communication tool, and we integrate with Happy, of course, through Slack. And so every day I get a Slack from Happy that provides me, you know, a little piece of coaching for either myself in terms of self-development, or it provides me coaching on one of my team members. And if I see that and I'm like, oh, I think that's really helpful, I'm going to click into it. You know, I can get a deeper dive. But beyond even just surfacing that into our day-to-day, you know, flow of work tools, it also enhances that because it knows who I'm working with, you know, more behind, like behind the scenes, it's aware, okay, these are the people that are the core part of Megan's day-to-day. These are the people she's working with the closest. And it's going to kind of, supercharge the amount of coaching that I'm getting, right? So the Happy as a tool knows I work with Brittany, you know, pretty closely. Let's make sure that Megan's getting consistent coaching on Brittany. So it's really trying to help build that in the places that you need it most. And it brings it to you rather than you having to seek it out. So not only is it accessible when you're looking for it, but it's also creating these moments where it's surfacing it automatically, and it's surfacing it in the tools you already have open to kind of be there when you're not necessarily even looking for it, but you may need it. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That's really, that's a fascinating tool. So is the tool, it sounds like it, like do frontline employees also get like a read on their boss, and are they getting that same feedback the other direction?
Yes. So everybody within the workspace. So you can have a workspace of 1,000 people. And certainly, you know, you can pare it down so that you're getting, you know, just your team. You can create coaching circles so that you're able to kind of view it based off of, you know, projects, who's on your, you know, specific project team or who's within your department, things like that. But everybody has access to the information. Everybody has access to view, you know, anybody in the organization. So frontline workers can be, you know, better understanding and looking anyone from their direct manager all the way up to the CEO of the company, right? Yeah. And the same thing works both ways. It's bidirectional. So it really kind of opens up that ability for us to develop that understanding and get that whole picture, regardless of where someone sits within the organization. And it creates that space for us to start to better understand, okay, how do I develop my communication style, my ability to collaborate with them in a more functional way for, you know, to get those outcomes that we're all looking for. We tend to all want the same things at the end of the day when we're looking at business outcomes and just what we're looking for from work. You know, at work, we want to be successful. We want to make sure that the job gets done. We want to also feel heard and understood. And so this is a great way to help people hear and understand everyone that's a member of their team, regardless of where they sit.
Can you give us, you mentioned Brittany, I think is the name you used. Can you give us like just a generic example of what something that you might see on a, you know, on any given day that what that would look like in terms of like specific.
Yeah, watch out. It sounds like Brittany might be a real person. So
yeah.
I know. Change the names to, you know, protect. Yeah. The
yeah. I could give you a generic example for sure. But, you know, I would be happy to even give the real deal too. So you might be sitting there and just get a quick Slack that says, hey, this is a better way to communicate with Brittany, or understand, you know, how to understand Brittany's of problem solving. You know, what is the way that Brittany approaches problem solving? And it'll just give you a very short, kind of quick, you know, snippet of what a tip, so to speak, to keep in mind of that person's, you know, style. So what are the types of natural behaviors that they would exhibit? Or what are some things that you could do to maybe enhance communication, to make sure that you're working effectively on a team. So it could be something, you know, along the lines, like if somebody was getting a coach on me, it might say, you know, better understanding Megan's communication style. On the other end, right? If someone wanted to adapt into me, it might say, you know, get to the point of the conversation quickly, or come to Megan, you know, with a logical, background in terms of what you're asking her to do. Megan tends not to like emotional appeals. She's going to want to see data. So be prepared with the facts in order to prove your case. Just things along those lines. And let's say they were like, oh, that's a great bit of information. I'm just going to click on get more. It kind of expands it out, gives some additional information, gives additional coaching context. And then really, if you wanted to, even from there, you could click directly into the work style and profile, learn even more about me, or go into a more in-depth, long-form coaching article that provides, again, specific to the person that's getting coaching on me based off of their style, how, you know, might they present something to me, or how would they best communicate something to me?
Interesting.
What about like, so different, I mean, you know, you have to have kind of a certain mindset, I think, if you're a leader in an organization, mm-hmm. to really take, like, you have to be like you were when James was like, hey, I want you to get some coaching. And some people are real open to that. Others are more resistant to that. And I also think a little bit about sort of different generations at work. And so I could see, you know, like an older mm-hmm. generation, maybe not feeling all that comfortable getting a bunch of advice from a robot Whereas a younger worker might not want to be like put into a certain box, even if it's the, you know, even if it's a psychological profile that's, but, you know, based on your own answers to a survey. I'm just curious, how do you deal with challenges like that?
So a couple things come to mind. The first being, you know, one of the things that we try really hard to do as just, you know, an organization is emphasize the fact that you have to, if you want to get buy-in, right, if you want to be able to get someone's endorsement for something and for them to really get the buy-in, you have to do exactly what we're talking about, which is present the case in a way that appeals to their underlying mm-hmm. motivations, right? So we would probably start by working with whoever, you know, is on this team and whoever's kind of managing the rollout to look at that person's happy profile or understand maybe even without that, just through talking, what their style might be, and help to develop the case that helps them see the benefit in a way that appeals to them. So, you know, if it's somebody that's, you know, strongly based in terms of relationships, you build the case and you explain the benefit in terms of the relationships. If it's somebody that's looking at, you know, very action biased, right? Somebody that just wants to kind of make sure that we're moving through and getting things done, and they like to just work through achievement. How can you connect this towards showing them that it helps have good outcomes in terms of achieving goals? So we always want to try to look at creating a benefit based off of, you know, the specific motivations that everybody has. And that's kind of the big picture of what we're talking about. In terms of, you know, those different perhaps resistance that people might have, mm-hmm. It definitely is something that we work through with teams. And so I think, like, when, especially when you're talking about the idea of kind of getting put in a box, right, that mm-hmm. is a true concern. And it's one of the things that we were really thoughtful about as we developed the tool and as we developed the assessment itself. I intentionally, part of what we created was something that tries not to do that. Because it could be very easy, like, oh, this is my, you know, this is my DISC assessment. It says that I'm a core I, and that's all that, you know, then anyone ever really thinks about me. And we start to use that language almost kind of like putting someone in that box. And so it's really important to emphasize the message, right, that this is a tool in terms of understanding, but it's not the big picture. Or the whole picture, I guess. But it's also important for us to create opportunities for people to present themselves in a way where they have agency over that presentation, and they have agency over even the language that's being used. And so when we created the Happy Work Styles, we worked to make sure that there were those opportunities within the process. So for instance, when you're building out or when you're going through the assessment process, there's opportunities like behind the scenes that already kind of knows, okay, this is where we're placing someone in terms of their happy work style, right? We believe that this is kind of where they land for these general behaviors. And it gives you the opportunity to actually select for yourself the words that you would use to describe that. And that's what gets built into the actual like work style report that then gets shared to your coworkers. So you have an opportunity to have agency in how you're presenting yourself, right? So you've chosen the words to describe yourself. You've chosen, hey, under stress, for example, these are some of the different ways that someone with your style might respond to stress. What do you think resonates with you the most? And so people can opt into that language, and we find that that allows them to feel like they have more control over that presentation because they've been able to use language that they're comfortable with. Yeah. That allows for the same messaging. It gets people the same information about them, but they're able to choose the language in terms of their representation. And then there's also sections within the work style and the profile where you can actually use your own words, right? So you can choose to fill the sections out or not. It depends on, you know, how much you want to share. And that is places where, you know, you can tell a little bit about yourself, or you can answer specific questions to help people kind of see a fuller picture and to get that whole picture perspective. So, you know, there's an opportunity for me to say, like, these are the three things that really make me happy at work. these are the three things that kind of make me grumpy at work. And mm-hmm. I'm telling you what that is. So it helps to break down that initial resistance of, you just stuck this label on me. You know, it doesn't feel good because I didn't have any choice in how that came out. Because we are providing the opportunity for the choice and the self-representation. And beyond that, you know, we really tried to make sure that we created a tool that took into account, you know, the thousands of different types of work styles that really yeah. are, you know, out there. And all of that is happening behind the scenes. So it really isn't like, oh, we're going to stick you in one of four boxes or one of eight boxes. And being able to demonstrate that to teams, I think, can be very powerful in moving that conversation forward.
And it seems to me, I mean, like even so, I'm familiar with DISC. We've done like Working Genius here. There's StrengthsFinder. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of different ways to kind of mm-hmm. do this. And it seems to me like there's two things. Like you can be, you know, your letter could be, you know, I, but you might actually be really, you know, you might just be like right on the borderline. And so you're mm-hmm. going to behave a lot differently than someone who is an E, right?
Yes.
Like a strong E. So mm-hmm. there's that whole component to it. So like the label itself, it's, you know, you have to go like a lot deeper than the label, and it sounds like you do. But the other thing to me about these tools is that you really kind of, you use the tool is a really good starting point and like a shorthand mm-hmm. place to start a conversation. The actual magic is the conversation that you have, right? And like,
exactly.
We talk about the tools that we've used, but then we really pretty quickly switch to, look, as your boss, as your leader, like, what are mm-hmm. some things that I do that you'd like me to do more of or keep doing?
Yeah.
What are some things that I do that you'd like me to stop doing? Like, that's a really simple, powerful, like, conversation. Those things change 100%. Over time, like that, mm-hmm. you know, and then having kind of a fallback of this other language where we could talk about work styles is obviously useful, especially for someone who doesn't really have, isn't all that comfortable sort of starting those conversations. Yeah. Like, it's a real good, you know, place to start. But at the end of the day, it's really the ongoing relationship, right?
Yes, agreed, 100%. So that's very in line with the way that we think about it. It's a tool, but a tool mm-hmm. isn't going to get you really 100% past the finish line. And mm-hmm. so it's the implementation of that. And we really try to work very closely with teams to make sure that training and that implementation is strong. And one of the things that you mentioned, I think, in terms of maybe like that's a starting point and it gives people kind of that quick access to begin the conversation, right? Another place where we find it can be very effective is in new managers mm-hmm. or emerging leaders, because they don't always have the language built yet. And so this is a tool for their toolkit. It's not going to suddenly snap your fingers, oh, and the whole thing is done, but it provides them with the access and the language to start those conversations in a natural and comfortable way. And sometimes that's just what people need, right? They need that starting point. They need that little spark to be able to be the catalyst of moving that forward and to feel more confident in it, right? To go mm-hmm. into it feeling a little bit more confident because they have that preparation.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, what a typical happy client, you know, you don't need to name names, but what does a typical client for you guys look like? You mentioned 7,000 people, like in scale, you know, that seems like a big client.
Well, they're all happy. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what's the norm, like small, medium, large?
So small to medium, I would say that the most effective is going to be over 50 for sure. You know, smaller teams can definitely utilize the tool and it can be great. But where we start to really see the challenge for having that level of understanding and being able to kind of work mm-hmm. through the layers that come with the company's hierarchy is kind of at that point. It becomes a little bit more difficult to convey the messaging in a consistent way and to really be able to have access to all the different people and the different moving parts. So that's really like probably where the sweet spot starts. And then really, honestly, anywhere up to teams of, 3,000, something along those lines. What's great about it is that ability to be effective, just depending on the level of scale that you're looking at. And some companies may choose to deploy it just within a specific place, right? So they may have one specific team that they feel this is a really beneficial tool for. And so they're deploying it there, and they may choose to, move it into other areas, over time. But it doesn't have to be the entire company in the workspace. It can be really adaptable in terms of how you choose to deploy it and how you choose to use it within, the size of your company or what the needs of your company are.
I always do like a bit of a LinkedIn dive on our upcoming guests, right? To see what you're posting and that kind of thing. And some of the words that I noticed, and you talked about building exceptional teams. We talk about building or creating extraordinary workplaces, fostering deeper connections, understanding team dynamics. But you also talk about AI and technology, and how AI. One of the things that it really struck. I'm big into AI tools. I love playing with them and trying to figure out how to use them for business and that kind of stuff. But you talked about how AI might be able to help us create a more human touch. And I found that to be very intriguing.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that and how that happens?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think I personally find the emerging technology of AI to be very exciting. And so just in terms of even like the dichotomy of what you're talking about there in that statement, right? For someone who's like, oh, I'm a very people-centered leader and I love AI. Like some people are like, oh, that seems a bit conflicting. Like help me understand. And the reason is kind of going back to part of what I was saying earlier is that AI is an amazing tool that allows us to do great things in the space that AI will never replace. So I understand and believe that there's parts of our ability as humans that we're just not going to ever replace as a tool. And a lot of that comes to the things that we were just talking about, right, with regards to really taking it beyond just like, here's your coaching, and now you need the human to implement it. Now you need to actually have the tough conversation. Now you have to actually be able to build the connection. And so you can provide the tools and it helps to create, opportunities to move into that. And that's where I think AI is really powerful. I like to look at ways to use AI in terms of automating certain aspects of my day to day, right? Those places where maybe the admin takes up so much of the time that I have. And because it has to get done, I have to put off some of the other things that are probably the more, important in some ways, or some of the things that really truly could only be done by a person, by a human. So I can find ways to integrate AI and use technology that allows me to free up the space to dive into that part of like creativity and building my team, relationship building. So, when we say that AI technology can kind of help towards actually building that human touch, it's because to me, AI is never going to replace that human touch, but it is going to free us up to be able to tap into it more. And it's going to free us up to be able to really utilize those parts of our whole selves, our intellect, our creativity, our hearts, our compassion, in a way that maybe we were spending a lot of that energy on stuff that we can now get done in a more, efficient, effective way. With even looking at the ways that we would integrate, AI with Happy, we utilize it primarily in terms of the coaching, generating the coaching, right? Because it allows us, when we're talking about thousands of different work styles and making sure that you're getting personalized coaching based off of all of these work styles, that just the scale of that is incredible. And so AI allows us to create that and to generate it at scale. But then we do still go through and we have that reviewed by business experts, leadership coaches, experts within the space, so that we're curating the coaching that's actually the best coaching, and we're making sure that what's being generated, is actually going to be helpful. And so you still do need that like eye on it. So it's moved us forward. It's allowed us to move to to create things at scale and at a speed that we probably wouldn't be able to do just on our own. And then that allows us to go in and add the human touch and to create the place of it that AI can't do, and to put that integration into the platform. And so that's the way that I look at it. You know, I tend to have a really positive and excited view about the way that it could transform workspaces and workplaces, because you're going to be able to focus on areas and innovation that you weren't previously able to because, you know, of the admin, really.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Any last question from you, Phil?
I just had a quick reaction to that, which is that another way, and I've used it myself this way, but it's a place where you can actually get some no risk reps practicing a conversation. So you can go into ChatGPT and say, look, I've got an employee and this is the situation. And you could even probably throw in some of the coaching that you have offered. And you go, I want to just practice this conversation. And it'll do a really good job of the back and forth of that conversation. And then you can go back and say, give me feedback about the conversation I just had. And it gives you like really good practical tips.
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that is such a great use of it, right? And it's freeing you up because you're able to kind of like work through that in a very effective and a way that it's really giving you good outcomes. And also it's practical, right? So like you're actually being able to take something and put it into practice and see like really great outcomes from it. So I do that as well. I love it. It allows me to like spin things up really quickly that I can then adjust and change on my own. So it can be really powerful if we're using it in, you know, with the correct intentions.
Yeah.
I just before we came on, I saw an article in a newsletter that I got, and it said that ESPN just started using AI to generate like sports summaries of sports events. So it's creating, you know, instead of having a human do that, and it did a great job of reporting on like on a tennis match or so, I forget what the exact event was, but it said that that it did a great job of reporting all the stats and all the plays and everything, but it also missed and failed to mention at all that a famous player announced their retirement because it like the machine missed that at the human aspect of it. So it's
that,
great.
Yeah, that's why you got to have that human part of it still.
Which kind of brings us back to where we started, the human touch and, you know, that and technology, you need both. So we're up on time. We're going to wrap up with our fun question that we always do. I always try to theme that question to the guest. So the question that I'm going to pose to you, Megan, is if you could pick any TV or movie character to join your team, given your fascination with building exceptional teams, who would you pick and why?
That's a great question. And it's a tough one because part of, you know, our philosophy is this idea that you really want to have a diverse team that's full of so many different people, right? And there's so many different strengths that different types of characters can bring to a team. But I gotta go with Ted Lasso. I have to go back to, I don't know if you guys have watched the show, but Coach Ted Lasso. And the reason why I think for me is that, you know, what a great representation of empathy and emotional intelligence and the outcomes, right, that can come from employing that on a team and working with, again, a very diverse group of people. If you look at the team that he was working with, lots of different motivations and different types of people and behaviors. And it was like his empathy and his ability to connect and create those relationships and his emotional intelligence that, you know, addressing situations and conflict that really was able to drive that success. And so if I was going to bring anybody on board from a television show or a movie, for sure, I'd grab Coach Lasso for sure.
not a bad pick at all. Did you come up with one?
Not really. I would probably do like Tina Fey. I think she'd be like hilarious to work with.
Yes.
So I don't know if I have to pick a show. I guess 30 Rock, but
I was going to say which version of Tina Fey.
Yeah, or Saturday Night Live.
I'm not sure I'd want to beat Tina Fey.
Right.
although I did go with a different presidential show for mine. This came from an email that we were copied on, and I was watching What's Next, your approachability minute that you did. What's Next. So West Wing, right? And Leo McGarrity, the chief of staff to Martin Sheen, Josiah
Bartlett.
That
show is near and dear.
Because Leo was the guy that, you know, he was no BS. He always said, he always told the truth, and, you know, and he always pushed to do the right thing, even if it wasn't the popular thing. And I think every organization needs somebody like that. So I saw that in this video that somebody shared with Phil and I. And I was like, that's my guy for this.
that's a good one.
I've forgotten about
that's
it.
That's a really good one. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Megan, for coming especially on a Friday afternoon and doing the afternoon show with us. It was great to have you as a guest. And we'll look forward to learning more about Happy down the road, and hope you have a great rest of your week.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. It was a pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Great to see you.
Have a great day.
All right, I will stop the recording. Yeah, thanks.